And you are listening to a Radio Geekly. I'm your host, Becky, and I am joined in the studio by two of our collective members. Please introduce yourselves.
David Kesters.
And Robert Lacoste.
That's great. We are Radio Geekly, a collection of folks who enjoy, rejoice, and delve into all of the geekly topics of everything, fandoms everywhere. And this month, we are talking to you about conventions.
Conventions. Those live
everywhere.
Events.
Yes. Exactly. And we have gone to several of them for you and are bringing a discussion about their place in nerd culture as of now and in the past and perhaps even into the future. I wanted to start off everything by introducing the idea of conventions and talking about our various experiences with them. I would posit myself that the first sci-fi convention is the World's Fair, or the World's Fairs that occurred, you know, I guess starting in the earliest 20th century.
I think that's fair, because they were seeking to show people not only what technology at that time could achieve, but what the vision for technology going into the future was.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's sort of the common vein that we find in all science fiction conventions.
So absolutely.
Like Alexander Graham Bell released his phone and things like that. And this was before before the 1900s, you know, during Garfield's presidency. So it was a lot of good stuff happening in that moment, and I think you have a good point with the conventions, the forefront of technology,
yeah,
and sci-fi,
yeah, and interests that were very specific in speaking to the future, and sci-fi, of course, being one of those. But as cons have developed, they have been centered around fantasy, around games, around anime, a number of TV shows and things like that, which all kind of speak to that future, or at least, you know, a reality other than the one that we're in now.
And even beyond that, some conventions just function as a perfect excuse to cosplay, play dress up, go as, you know, who you want to be seen as, put on your real skin.
Right, exactly. Live that authentic self. And I feel that historically, conventions have functioned in this sort of way, that this was a place where people who had very specific interests could, you know, exist in a room with other people who shared said interests, who wouldn't necessarily be subject to derision or, you know, like that lack of community. They were real community building efforts, no matter what the subject matter of that particular con is, which is cool. Like, yeah, part is a fascinating piece. And as we go on in, you know, into the future of conventions, we will see that inclusivity kind of go beyond simple subject matter, I think.
Yeah, and it's interesting. You could almost make the point, now granted we've had some turmoil in the recent past with issues of inclusivity, women in gaming, that type of stuff, but I think that the validity of the face-to-face experience facilitated by the convention is still highly relevant, because as opposed to, you know, the digital environment, sure, yeah, we're getting much more interesting digital environments where we have a visually rich landscape, but does it necessarily completely replace the face-to-face experience? No. We want to, you know, meet new people, actual people, not necessarily their digital representations purely. So I think that the convention is not only, I mean, it's been extremely valid and viable going into the building of nerd culture, and it's going to remain that way. But as we'll discuss in this show, there are pivots that are coming. You know, it's there are different focus pieces that, you know, as good stewards of nerd culture, I think the cons are responding to sort of the new challenges that are cropping up.
So today we're going to be talking about and listening to audio from a variety of different cons. We have audio from Wizard World Comic-Con that happened earlier in this year at the Convention Center. We have audio and interviews from Geek Girl Con, which happened last month in Seattle. And we're going to talk about this inclusivity charity that helps to get folks who would normally not be able to access con culture into the cons. And so that's an exciting piece that we'll be talking about today. So stay tuned to our Radio Geekly. We'll be taking questions in near the end of the show. But for now, I wanted to chat real briefly about your first con.
Ooh.
What do you think? What is your first con? Mine was Dragon Con in Atlanta. It was wackadoo. It was really intense.
Is quite the first con.
Yeah. What about you?
Oh, my first con was Gen Con.
What?
I know, when it was back in Milwaukee. It was great. My mom took me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's so good.
Oh, yeah.
What about you, David?
My first one was the summer of 1999. It was the World Star Wars Con in Denver. It was, of course, before the floor dropped out on us and actually released the movie that came out, the prequel. But at the time, it was like Star Wars is back. All of us, you know, who weren't around really when it first was, you know, first premiered, are there for the second round, even though the second round ended up being what it became. But yeah, that was pretty exciting.
And yeah. Wow.
Yeah. No, and do you remember that first moment when you walked into the con and we're all talking about rather large cons that are rather involved?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh my goodness, there are so many people here. And they all look sort of like me.
Right.
I'm allowed to talk about anything.
Right, yeah. I can't believe I can go into this room and then ask questions of the people who made the thing that I like amongst all of these hundreds of other people that are part of this.
Mm-hmm.
It was really cool. And I have to imagine that no matter what that con is, what its subject matter, it's a totally new world and experience. And so we're going to intro that into our Wizard World experience. Our correspondent slash collective member, Jesse, went to Wizard World Comic Con. I keep thinking Dragon Con, but that's not it. That's not it. Calm down. Calm down. Okay, so yes, we're going to hear a piece about her experience in talking to the con goers there.
Hey everyone, this is just Jess, and I was fortunate enough to join the KBOO Collective at Wizard World Comic Con this weekend. It was an awesome 3-day event featuring celebrity panels, gaming in all its many forms, and exhibitors displaying their artwork and various trinkets for sale. And of course, there were comic books, so overall, it was a great event. This year is KBOO's first year having a booth, and I hope it won't be the last. While at the Comic-Con, I thought I'd take the opportunity to wander around and interview folks with a little lightning round Q&A, Vox Pop style, seeing what people were into and where their loyalties lied. And I found it quite interesting to hear people's responses by how passionate they were about choosing one side of the fence over the other. I only had 5 questions, with a couple sub-questions, but boy, did some folks have a lot to say. I started off with this first one.
First question, who's your favorite doctor?
And I'm referring to Doctor Who, of course. A show consisting of 12 different doctors over the course of its running, which started back in 1963. So I was curious to hear which doctor was the fan favorite.
10.
10.
10, by far.
10.
11.
11.
Now, for those of you that might not be familiar with Doctor Who, when someone gives the number 9, 10, or 11, they're referring to Christopher Eccleston, David Tennant, and Matt Smith. Those are the more recent doctors, within the last decade or so, and therefore, I kind of figured they would be the most popular. There were a couple fans, though, who did not want to answer completely.
That's a tough one. 9 was my first. I also like 10. I like them both. I'm not going to decide between them.
And even some of those who had their own unique response to the question.
Dr. Horrible.
Favorite doctor? Oh, House.
When we makes robots?
Nice. I like that one, too.
Which I thought was very creative. Question 2 on the list was another tough one.
Star Trek or Star Wars?
Yes, this is a question that had very passionate answers, even those with fairly good reasons behind them.
Star Trek.
Star Wars.
Star Wars all the way.
I have to say Star Wars. I never jumped on the Star Trek train. Trek.
Star Trek.
Star Trek.
Star Wars.
Star Wars.
I'm going to have to go Star Wars. They have lightsabers.
Star Trek, always.
But overall, I thought there was quite an even draw between those Trekkies and the Jedis. With this question, I had sub-questions like...
Kirk or Picard?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I'd say... Kirk.
Picard.
Picard.
Oh, Kirk all the way. I you can't find that sort of beautiful cheese in the original series anywhere else. It's amazing. He created a whole subgenre of cheese just based on his bad acting.
Kirk.
I'm assuming you went to see Shatner this weekend?
I'm trying to. Picard.
Kirk.
Oh, it's a tough one. I had to go with Picard.
Kirk.
Picard.
Which gave some creative responses. Despite William Shatner being one of the key celebrities here at Wizard World Comic Con, there are quite a few Picard fans, which made me very happy, since I myself am a next-gen kind of girl. The sub-question to Star Wars was...
Do you acknowledge episodes 1, 2, and 3?
Another controversial question that spanned many intense but reasonable replies.
I acknowledge them. I don't love them.
I do my best.
But you know, they are an important part of the story.
They're existing?
They exist.
They're definitely
things
that happened that I can't take away.
No.
No comment.
No.
No.
The pod racing was really cool, but that's probably it. That's all I'm going to acknowledge.
You will ignore Jar Jar Binks?
Yes.
They exist. I don't deny reality. I hope they remake them someday.
Yes. They add a little bit to the story. Granted, there is a little bit too much love story, but it adds to the story.
If I must.
Yes, I do. Okay. All right. Die hard fan. Nice.
Question 3.
Marvel or DC Comics?
Marvel, yeah.
That's Marvel.
Marvel.
Marvel Cinematic Universe. I tend to read more DC graphic novels.
I was going to say, as far as like from a Hollywood film, definitely Marvel. TV, there's a lot of great character development with their Justice League and Injustice series.
Agreed.
So that's how I would split that.
Oh, DC. I'm all about Young Justice and Teen Titans. That's my jam.
Marvel. All the way.
I like them both, to be honest. But I gotta tell you, I favor the villainous. Those are my favorite.
Marvel.
Both.
Marvel for movies, DC for TV.
Marvel.
Hands down?
Hands down.
Okay.
Go Avengers.
There you go.
This one was pretty one-sided, though. I think mainly due to the media that's given Marvel a slight advantage over DC Comics with all of its movies and TV shows as of late. But there were a couple DC fans.
I'll have to go with DC.
Marvel and Batman.
Marvel plus Batman and Joker.
I've had someone say Marvel plus Batman.
Yeah.
Who doesn't like Batman?
Yeah, who doesn't like Batman?
Mostly just for Batman. Which made me wonder, could Marvel ever attempt to buy the rights to the Batman franchise? If so, then DC's in a world of trouble.
Getting some good responses here. I kind of have an idea of what the poll standings are going to be, but I'm going to get some more people here and see what the poll's results. So stay tuned. It's been a fun con, I definitely have to say.
Well, that was Wizard World Comic-Con.
Such good questions.
I know. Jesse is quite the interviewer. I felt like it was really interesting and telling that, you know, when we are in these sort of cons that we focus a lot on like the consumer culture piece of it. Like, for example, the Marvel or DC question and people saying like, oh yeah, Marvel for movies. Like, well...
When?
It's also TV too, like lots of Netflix recently, you know, what is it? Jessica Jones.
Oh, and
Luke
Cage.
Luke Cage, yeah. Exactly. So like, but that's interesting because, you know, that's sort of the way that we consume culture in this way is in a consumable fashion. Like, it is TV, it is movies, comic books, things like that. And I think that the excitement for me is the whole world around it that organically grows from a fandom.
Oh, yeah. And on the subject of the world that grows, I remember watching the first Flash TV series when I was very young. It was, mm-hmm. you know, your classic sort of, it was a step beyond the old Batman, but only a little step.
Right, yeah.
But now, as opposed to, you know, the old Batman and the old Flash and those sort of standalone TV, mm-hmm. TV shows, now we have TV shows that acknowledge the existence of the other TV shows. So all the characters exist in that same world, which I think is, it propels the story so far ahead from where it once was.
Oh, yeah. And that's sort of what we've been building towards, I think, in, like, you know, fan fiction and the universes that sort of build around this canon. It does become referential. It does take a look at the things around it, the universe of, like, characters. What do you think, David?
It's definitely something to escape into, that we've created this world outside of our world, and how they play with each other. It's just it's something else, and I enjoy just the prolific amount of things we can go to these days.
I know, I know. There's a wealth of places to go. There are many different topics to talk about. Wizard World was interesting in that there was a very strong emphasis on purchasing things. Like, the majority of the way that the floor worked was, it was miles, I would say, of vendors, of different people selling vintage comic books or, like, body pillows or things like that. We had a booth in the on the floor as well, and trying to do outreach. So that was where this piece came from. But, you know, otherwise, like, the panels, I didn't feel like they really delved into subjects that I guess were meant to be ostensibly, like, really sort of progressive in that way. They had one about, you know, like, women in, you know, fantasy, and almost all the panelists, for example, were men.
Oh.
So, like, that's something that I find, you know, happens. Like, we have these social topics that we're exploring, but we haven't really gotten to the point where the people are in these big cons, or in these cons that, like, have, like, the name recognition, that travel the country. They don't really speak to the people that experience those, like, being a woman or being queer in these spaces.
Right. That's an interesting point you bring up, because you could certainly make the argument that if you have a primarily white male middle-aged demographic, then to mirror that demographic and get them to, you know, take interest in the panels, then the panelists should mirror the majority of the demographic making up the audience. Mm-hmm. However,
right, in this instance,
however, to push ahead a progressive agenda, you need to sort of break out of that mold. Now, does that necessarily serve the audience as a mirror? No, but it serves them in a cognitive fashion much better than just having an echo chamber created, which is a whole other subject, which we'll probably save for another episode of A Radio Geekly, the echo chamber of
the
nerddom.
Echo chamber, yes. But you know, this is a great segue into this next piece that Rob, in fact, has helped us get, in that he attended Geek Girl Con, which is a con that is primarily, like, the lens is on women and female identified persons who are within geek culture.
I went on an away mission.
Yes,
in the planet of the ladies.
And not red shirt style or anything. He came back. He brought us back this audio. And so let's go ahead and hear that and see how, you know, the differences between, you know, this really, like, Wizard World Con and Geek Girl Con.
My wife drops me off at 10:30 a.m. I board the Bolt bus headed for Seattle at 11:15. On the way, the ride is comfortable. I sit in the rear of the bus, attempting to complete a live-action game for Nerd Camp, only 2 weeks away. My mind wanders with the scenery. My excitement for Geek Girl Con grows. I am curious to study this culture, see what Seattle has to offer in the way of nerd culture, how it's developed, who are the players. Completely foreign atmosphere to me. Disembarking in Seattle, the streets are busy. I make my way, choosing to walk the mile, to the Green Tortoise Hostel. There I secure my belongings and head out for dinner with my friend Dina and the first of what I'm sure will be many parties over the weekend.
We're here at GeekGirlCon to sort of figure out what GeekGirlCon is, what it represents to people, and what it says about geek culture or the evolution of geek culture as it's currently progressing. I'm here with Christine Hassel.
Yes.
And this is a Radio Geekly reporting from GeekGirlCon.
I'm currently their deputy director, so I assist our executive director. I fill in as needed. I've done a lot of jobs in the org over the years. I've run their Twitter feed since I've started, and I joke that they'll have to pull it out of my hands because I love our Twitter community. So basically deputy director, and I'm the Twitter administrator.
So maybe you could tell me how this got started. This has been around 5 years?
This is our sixth year.
Sixth year.
So our origin story is at San Diego Comic-Con, there was a panel called, I think it was Geek Girls Exist. And they put it up against the Scott Pilgrim panel in like Hall H. So I don't think it was a case where they thought, oh, no one's going to go. But from the stories, because I didn't go, it overfilled. And fire marshals were like, no more people in the room. And so after the panel was done, a lot of women started talking. And they were like, oh, we live in Seattle or we live in San Francisco. Let's keep this conversation going. And over the next 6 months, it was super grassroots, and they did a lot of small fundraisers and like karaoke nights to raise money, and they put on their first convention, or we put on our first convention in 2010. And it was at Seattle Center. It was a back and forth between Seattle Center and EMP. So it was the year that people had to walk back and forth, but it was really cool. Jane Espenson was there, Trina Robbins, Chase Masterson. There was a lot of like important women in what they did who just wanted to come and be a part of this thing. And our next year we moved here to the conference center at the Washington State Convention Center, which has been our home ever since. And I believe from the beginning, they were very clear in the mission statement to say that there would be no gatekeeping at GeekGirlCon. Because sometimes if you go to other comic book conventions or other pop culture conventions, if you're not hip and don't watch Doctor Who, or maybe you haven't seen all of Orphan Black, you'll get treated with that kind of derision of, you're not a real geek. Or if someone sees your Star Wars tattoos, they want to quiz you on them. Or go, oh, do you know this comic? Because they want to try to trip you up. At GeekGirlCon, I have found that if I run into someone that has not seen Steven Universe, somebody else is more than happy to go, you have to watch it, because there's like this celebration of wanting to share the fandom here and not call someone out because they don't know what Saga is or Planet or whatever somebody is into. And the fact that in the mission statement, we're pretty explicit that everyone is welcome here, provided they know that our focus is on women, and also that this is a zero tolerance for any kind of harassment. Like, just don't even bring it here, because you bring it here, it's going to get shut down and we will boot you. We have a really well-trained reaction team that are selected from our volunteers, so that they're there to make sure that if by any chance something happens, like maybe lost child, or maybe somebody feels like something happened, they're there to be the bridge between, you know, security and police, to not sweep anything under the carpet, but just like, tell us what's wrong. We're trained so that we can really listen. Okay, let's continue the conversation. Yeah, we're very lucky that we haven't had anything. 6 years, knock wood.
Hey. I'm here with Mike Selinker.
Hey. I feel like it's a show that doesn't have very many analogs around the country. I completely understand that. One really interesting thing that's downstairs here is the DIY science sort of academy downstairs, where little girls and boys are essentially doing real science. And I think a lot of families, you know, they get here and they see that, and the 8-year-old girl goes, I want to do that all day. You know, and what a positive experience that is, because you brought a kid to essentially a comic book show, you know, whatever, right? It's like, oh, you think their mind is going to be filled with cotton candy, and at the end of the day, they built a volcano.
Like, we in moving our DIY science zone, which is a really super cool space, started by one of our staffers who's a woman of color, and she's very impassioned about inspiring kids to do STEM. And what better way to do it than to have a bunch of scientists come and show them how science can be relatable for kids. And the first year that we did it, it was super cool. It was on the smaller side, but adults were right beside the kids. So we're like, okay, well, the next year, let's make it bigger, and so that there can be like two tracks, adults and kids. And this is the first year that we've had like so much space downstairs, and there's all this room, and they like have bugs, like millipedes and centipedes, so kids can know the difference. And they were doing things like, let's make gummy mummies. And in the years past, it's let's learn how to take DNA out of strawberries to show kids.
Wow.
This is what we do. Yeah, it's really, really cool. And all of the scientists, they come from all over the United States.
So hi, this is a Radio Geekly, and I'm here with...
It's Caitlin.
This is Malia.
And McKenna.
And you guys have some amazing costumes. Maybe you could tell me a little bit, like, what you're dressed as, and what went into the construction of these rather elaborate suits.
Well, mainly for just the love of cosplay and the characters themselves. It took a very long time to make, but just constructing something out of foam... hot glue can really wow some people just with some time.
And what are the names of your character costumes?
This is Golden Freddy.
And I cosplay as Foxy.
And I'm Springtrap.
And this is all from Friday Night at Freddy's?
Yes, Five Nights at Freddy's.
Oh, Five Nights at Freddy's.
I'm here with Regina and Bonnie. Our listeners may be completely unfamiliar with cosplay. So what is it? How'd you get into it? What's important about it to you?
Cosplay is short for costume play, and it is dressing up. That's the super basic version of it. I got into it many years ago in college, and what had happened was I had a video game series that I liked very much, Final Fantasy, specifically Final Fantasy VIII, and I really liked the coat in this game. And I had talked to my mom, and I was just like, oh, you sew this thing for me. And she's like, one, no. Two, you need to learn how to do this yourself. And so she sent me to my grandma, who, the look on her face when I brought in a little video game miniature of this character and was like, I want to make this cowboy duster. And she was just like, you've chosen the hardest thing to learn how to sew on. Let's do it. And this was like the best time I had with this particular grandmother, was learning how to sew. And from that, I've since taken some classes, nothing like super fancy, but it just been things that I've tried on my own. I've made costumes for my son. And it's actually become a part of my job as a librarian.
I'm sitting here with Carrie and Leslie from Black Nerd Problems. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
Hi.
I was recommended to the convention last year by a friend. She says, there's this convention in Seattle, and it's really women-focused, and it's just a party. And so I've been trying to find my way up here ever since. And the amazing... I go to a number of fan cons in Northern California, and this is the most diverse convention I've ever been to. In terms not only just of racial diversity, but there are mostly women here at the convention.
Yes.
There are a million interests represented on the exhibit floor, in the panels, and I really appreciate the emphasis on the family friendliness and on girls, and bringing girls who are in those awkward 12 to 15 kind of age spaces into science and into the world that we as adults love so much, but that can be kind of hostile to girls like that, and objectifying them or making them feel like they have to be one way or another. And this space just really says, hey, there are adult women here who are with you, and you can be whatever kind of nerd girl you want to be. And that's just so much fun for me as a mom and as a woman to see and to be able to share. And so I really want to come up here and be able to report on it and to share it with our readers nationwide, so that they know what kind of fun stuff is possible, that you can bring this to your own local convention in certain ways. And or you can come here and see us, right? And because Seattle's nice. So, you know, there's some options for everybody.
Right. So as someone who identifies as a nerd and also a womanist under the umbrella of feminism, I'm always talking about navigating spaces to be safe, navigating spaces as a woman and navigating nerd spaces on Twitter and at cons and stuff. It's just really important. And here, it's just so great, right?
Yeah,
I mean, it's family friendly, it's girl friendly, it's woman friendly. You know, you see all the little kids, little girls from yay high to, you know, older women. Everyone's in cosplay.
Yeah.
I mean, you see women on the panels, you see women as the agents, the people who are helping out in the red shirts, you see women like everywhere, and it's just really important. You know, we talk about having representation and having representation in the organization, people running the everything. You see women everywhere. It feels great. It feels warm and friendly, and it doesn't feel like an unsafe place, you know? And I really appreciate that, and I really feel that.
We're here with Anita Sarkeesian. I got that pronunciation right that time.
Excellent.
So, welcome to the show. So maybe you could just tell me, how's the convention been going for you? You know, any highlights?
Yeah, it's wonderful. So I have been at GeekGirlCon every year since the first year. So this is what, year six now? This is my first year tabling, though. So we are up in the expo hall. We have a table. We have some merch. We're interacting with fans, introducing new folks to our work that isn't familiar with it. So it's been a really different experience for me, but also really rewarding and great. And the number of people who have come up to me that are first-time attendees at GeekGirlCon is really awesome and exciting. One woman was telling me about how she was getting really emotional just being here because it's such a different convention from so many other conventions. It's warm, it's celebratory, it's a space where folks who are traditionally marginalized in geek culture can feel welcome and not undermined and undervalued at every moment, or like have to take a test to get through the door about how much they know about a particular fandom, right? And so it's, you know, it's a very special space, and I'm so glad to be able to be a part of it every year.
So for our listeners who might not know of the epic Anita Sarkeesian, would you like to just give us a quick rundown of,
yeah,
like who you are, what you do, why you're awesome, and why people say praises?
So I run Feminist Frequency, which is an educational nonprofit. We look at the way women are represented within popular culture. So our biggest, our most well-known project to date is called Tropes Versus Women in Video Games, where we're specifically looking at some of the really harmful, kind of degrading representations of women throughout the history of gaming. We also are in the process of releasing our latest series called Ordinary Women Daring to Defy History, and that is telling the stories of women who've been written out of history, because too often the history books are full of stories about men, and women are completely erased from all of the incredible, amazing things that we've done. And actually, like, some of the work that women have done has been so instrumental to changing the way that we exist today. You know, if it wasn't for women, computers wouldn't look like they do currently, for example. And so I think it's really important that we share and tell those stories.
This is a Radio Geekly from GeekGirlCon.
And thank you so much, Rob, for bringing back an amazing experience, it sounds like, in this particular world, which looks to emphasize, you know, historically marginalized communities being a part of something,
mm-hmm,
being a part of this geek culture.
Yeah, I think honestly the most impactful thing that didn't that got left on the cutting room floor, it was this little anecdote that I was told that the measure of success for the convention for one person was, it was a convention where a father would not feel uncomfortable, mm-hmm, about letting his daughter like run around, just explore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, comparatively, PAX is a super packed convention with just everyone there, and it's not somewhere you would want to say like unhitch your child and be like explore.
Right, go for it.
I'll find you at the end of the day.
Do
maybe in Lost and Found.
Right. Well, I feel like, you know, in terms of mainstream cons and things like that, that they are still trying to integrate a really important piece of inclusivity and also consent, like teaching consent out the door, where, like, you know, cosplay is not consent, you know, folks having buttons that indicate that they want to be asked for their identifiable pronouns, things like that. So it sounds like, you know, Geek Girl Con is the sort of like paradigm in growing that, for sure, and that's an empowering, wonderful wonderful space, especially with the science focus, because that gets ignored often in geek culture. Like, a geekiness can extend to an enthusiasm and love for science.
Absolutely. And I see it as, I think part of the direction that we're going with conventions in general is to reacquaint ourselves with not just science fiction, but science fact. And we're back to the World's Fair point, mm-hmm. where that mm-hmm. was using the bedrock of the currently maximized complexity technologies, and then showing the vision of where it's going.
Mm-hmm.
And to that effect, I think Oricon actually does a pretty decent job of that. They okay. bring in people from NASA.
Mm-hmm.
They have talks about where is current sort of low orbit spaceflight technology going.
Mm-hmm.
What can we do right now for what price point?
Mm-hmm. Well, you yourself are involved in a number of really cool things at OMSI, where there's that intersection between gaming, the sort of imaginative, creative exercise that has been relegated to this world of the art and creativity, but then separated from the hard science piece. So that's exciting that
yeah.
it's more and more part of the culture.
And I certainly appreciate in that capacity how you've got this sort of regimented, process-oriented science base.
Mm-hmm.
But in order to really figure out the usage of that base, you need to explore the liberal arts, the creative side of it,
mm-hmm.
Or else it remains as a sort of engineering stock idea that then will be put into something. Will that something be ultimately a pleasurable experience? Well, that's where the creative comes in.
Right.
That's exactly. Where the value proposition is.
Mm-hmm. So I would like to highlight a few of the events that are maybe happening in town. So
sure,
would you please share, Rob?
Absolutely. Well, on the calendar, we'll do this chronologically, I would be remiss if I didn't throw out an honorable mention to the CthulhuCon, which we've missed. You can't get it this year, but you can get it next year. And they usually do a crowdfunding Kickstarter to fund it. So you can just lock it in, and they've all got all sorts of awesome swag and shorts about Cthulhu mythos that you won't see anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
But let's talk about what you can.
Right, yeah. What is possible since we don't travel back in time?
Oricon, not yet. Oricon is coming up on November 18th through 20th. That'll be, I believe, at the Doubletree in Portland.
Mm-hmm.
And then shortly after that, we'll have NewCon. NewCon, I believe, is at the Marriott in Portland.
I think so. But you can find all this online.
Yes,
absolutely.
Absolutely. NewCon. Mm-hmm. And that's December 30th through January 1st. So if you don't have New Year's plans,
right,
you might explore that as your New Year's plans.
Yeah, especially, I would encourage anyone that indeed. Hasn't been to a con, check out something.
Indeed. And you can play dress up there. Many people play dress up there. I know, right? Dress up New Year's.
Yeah.
So after NewCon, then we've got Nerd Camp Night Out. Now, Nerd Camp also just happened in October. Mm-hmm. That was a blast.
Mm-hmm.
It was the first one of its kind. And the Nerd Camp Night Out is coming up at Red Castle Games on January 28th. And then after that, we'll conclude with sort of the spring schedule. GameStorm will be happening at the Jansen Beach Red Lion,
mm-hmm.
March 30th through April 2nd. And funny story about that, that's where Becky and I met.
Wait, guess what?
You're like, oh my God, are you as nerdy as me? Yes.
Yes, exactly. Come on the radio and let's be nerds.
Indeed.
Yeah, we have a thriving culture of cons here in Portland. And our next piece actually highlights some of the work being done by folks who recognize that attendance at cons can be hard. Like, there are barriers to entry aside from, your gender identification, that of financial access, and whether or not you can afford to go to these cons. And so this piece by Jess as well from Pretty Awesome Gamers will explain what that means.
Hey there, KBOO listeners, just Jess here, and I am joined on the line by Andrew Von Ritchie from the organization Pretty Awesome Gamers. Hey, Andrew, how's it going today?
Hey, pretty good. How are you?
Doing okay. Thanks for taking the time out of your day to chat with us a little bit. I'm excited to hear about your organization, Pretty Awesome Gamers. For those folks that don't know about the organization, why don't you take a minute or two to describe what you guys do?
Yeah, well, thanks for having us on. Much appreciated. So Pretty Awesome Gamers is a nonprofit that started last October, so we're a pretty relatively new company. Founder is from Sisters, Oregon, just south of you guys in Portland. Basically, the bottom line is that we grew up pretty nerdy, and you know, we were really into video games, and we spent a lot of time in that world investing ourselves into, you know, just having fun with, you know, video games, and some of our board members are into different comics and shows. And so, you know, we get to an age where we're like, okay, well, we can't be doing this for like 5 or more hours a day until we die. So what can we do with that energy in this comic and game related world that is going to be beneficial for us and the community and something that we can all feel good about and feel productive? And so the founder of Pretty Awesome Gamers originally went to school for graphic design and wanted to make his own video game. And we still actually have that as a long-term plan, but we shied away from that and created this charity. Basically, what we do in a nutshell is we take terminally ill kids or kids with chronic medical conditions to conventions, mainly Comic-Cons and Comic-Con-type conventions. And we just show them a full expense-paid vacation. And we do it. We work nationwide.
Wow. And with the organization, how do you locate these children? Do you have particular hospitals or places that are already that you're already connected to?
Right. So currently, anyone can go to our website and nominate a kid. If any of you guys, you know, have a younger sibling or your neighbor, you know, has a kid, or you know, anyone you know, any kid with a serious medical condition or they're terminally ill, or anything in that realm, you can go to our website, www.prettyawesomegamers.com, and you can just go to nominate and just fill out the form and nominate them. We always need more kids. Our goal is to reach awarding 50 families per year. So we always need more kids, basically.
Wow. How many have you been able to impact so far?
Well, as I said, we just started last October. So we spent the first month just doing promoting. We were going to different Comic-Cons and having our booth and getting our name out there and trying to meet artists and kids and people to grow the company. And we actually just took our first, they were brother and sister, Neela and Vaughn. They're out of Texas, and they both diagnosed with cystic fibrosis. It was one of those situations where the mother wasn't told until after her second child that any kid she had would unfortunately have this terrible condition. So we just took them down to the Austin Wizard World Comic-Con down there in Austin, Texas, and it was a great time.
That's so cool. So what entails in these trips for the kiddos? Do they get all expenses paid, like flights and things like that, or what's all entailed in the convention experience?
Absolutely. So first off, we let them decide who they want to be for the weekend, because our slogan is "We create superheroes." So, well, for example, Neela and Vaughn, they wanted to be, she was Belle from Beauty and the Beast, and he was Bumblebee the Transformer.
Nice.
So we try to get professional cosplay artists to custom design them their outfits, so the cosplay artists get publicity and the kids get really awesome, just top of the line like costumes. And so from the get go, they get to be, you know, their favorite character. And then the best choice for transportation is we can fly them, we can go by bus or taxi, depending how close they are to the venue. But yeah, it's completely free, and then they get into the convention for free. In most cases, they'll get sort of like the VIP badge, in which case they can get to the front of the lines, I think, or get a better chance to meet celebrities. Just kind of get a better experience in general with those kind of special badges, and that depends on the convention. See, yeah, so they get to go around the convention and see a lot of art, and obviously a lot of people there are dressed up, and the energy at these places are just very, very positive and very good. I always tell people, you know, my friends who ask about it, you don't even have to be into any of this stuff to have a great time there, because it's just very good energy. So while they are at the convention, we kind of sneak into either their hotel room or their house, their bedroom, and we decorate it with all kinds of art. We put up pictures and trinkets and this and that, and then so it's a surprise to them when they come back, and they're like, oh my gosh, is this for me, kind of a thing. So
that's really cool. I could just picture, you know, like your 8 or 9 year old self and just having this experience and then coming back and it's still continuing, you know. That's really cool.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's very, you can tell it's very otherworldly for the kids. You know, they just they don't even know what to think about it because it's so surreal almost, you know, and they're kind of living this. They've never seen anything like it, basically. So it's very enlightening to see the kids react to all this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have you noticed like an impact in growth, like also with the families too? Like how are their reactions to the whole convention thing?
Yeah, well, I mean, most of the time the parents, are going to love it. I mean, because, for example, the kids we just took down in Austin, just a week prior to us taking them, they spent a week in the hospital because they have a lot of complications with their condition. And so, you know, the parents are having to deal with all that too, and it's a lot of stress and a lot of times very expensive. So to have any chance to get out and do something cool with their kids, you know, the parents obviously are going to jump all over it and have a great time. So it's just pretty much fun all around.
I know with the geeks here that, you know, being an impact at such a young age, it truly like helps with the development of like creativity and, you know, reaching dreams and stuff. And being a child with a terminally ill disease, sometimes you kind of lose hope. And just so like bringing that hope back to them, you know, and sharing those moments that, yeah, you can still have fun and then going to these great events despite your condition. And I think that's just a wonderful like community building tool, is despite differences amongst children and just people in general, there's still that encouragement to want to explore and just be who they are. I know that you guys are based here in Oregon. Are there events and things that you guys do? I know that you were mentioning getting your word out by going to other conventions and stuff, but how do you guys raise your funds, or is it just donated when you get these tickets and these VIP passes for the kids?
So, yeah, we have a lot of different ways we raise funds. We do everything from having booths at conventions, just kind of like talking to people. A lot of what we do is get in contact with different businesses, all different kinds, you know, because we are 501c3 nonprofit, so businesses or individuals can donate their money to us. But I mean, we do all different kinds of things. We're looking to have a Pac-Man themed, a marathon type running thing over here in Central Oregon. We have people across the states, you know, our board members are nationwide, so we go to conventions across the states. Oh yeah, we're also planning a golf tournament up at Black Butte down here in Central Oregon to raise funds, and we're going to do like a dinner and auction some art and things like that. So we're pretty open, and that's the cool thing about being a new company, is that we can be creative and just kind of figure it out on our own. So we're very open to opportunities, basically.
Awesome. And can people volunteer? Are you looking for more support in different aspects of the company, you know, either going to the conventions or even just on the business side?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, whether you want to invest your time, you know, as a volunteer, or art, you know, we have a lot of artists working with us, whether you're a cosplay designer or just, you know, you paint or whatever it is. We also do work with like the 501st Cosplay Division, which is a nationwide cosplay charitable people, and they'll send like stormtroopers to escort the kids in and things like that. You know, we're very open. And then also, or funds, you can just go to the website and just kind of check us out. Again, it's prettyawesomegamers.com. Just shoot us an email, or if you'll fill out a form, just let us know whatever it is you want to do.
Thanks again, Andrew. And why don't you mention the website again and where the upcoming event that you were saying you had a golf tournament. What's the date on that?
The golf tournament date is undecided, but it should be in the spring, again, at Black Butte Ranch. Like our Facebook to keep posted on that, or our Instagram. And let's see. Yeah, so our upcoming event is in Eugene. I think they call it UConn. It's just like the Eugene Comic Con that they have going down there. And that is, I want to say, November 10th and 11th, that weekend. And we'll be taking a girl named Amanda down there who has a serious physical handicap. So that's the next event. We'll have a booth. You can come say hi if you're in the area. Check out all the costumes and stuff and meet the kid if you'd like. But, yeah, other than that, you can just go to prettyawesomegamers.com. Follow us on Facebook, on Instagram. If you have any questions or anything you'd like to donate or be a volunteer, you can just go to the website and shoot us an email. And that's pretty much it.
Well, thanks, Andrew Von Ritchie from the Pretty Awesome Gamers charity organization, for taking the time out of your day to talk with us here on Radio Geekly.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Jesse. I look forward to working with you guys in the future.
All right, and thanks, Jess, for that excellent interview. What a great organization, of which there seem to be others as well. You were mentioning one that, what do they do?
Yeah, it's Con or Bust, and that's con-or-bust.org. So they help, they're helping fans of color attend science fiction conventions. And if you go to their website, I'm looking at their website right now, it actually is a great index for the Geek Girl Con-esque conventions, mm-hmm. Conventions that focus on diversity, inclusivity. So I love this as both a tool and reference.
That is amazing. And the equity movement that we're making in geek culture towards inclusivity and cons is totally incredible. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's the future of con going anyway. It's so good that we're able to, you know, talk about specific topics within a safe space, but making that space specifically safe for people who normally don't experience safety within any environment. Mm-hmm. That's incredibly important.
Richer conversations, richer experiences.
Exactly.
Exciting so times.
I know. Oh my God. Exciting. So speaking of rich conversations, David, hello.
I suppose this would switch gears from the con thing.
Yeah. Well, this is a great sort of lens to take a look at what we have all been sort of recent past with political, I don't know, like screes and the kind of like presidential politics.
That's the nicest way.
I'm wonderful. I'm a big fan of, you know, all kinds of cartoons with the, you know, adult bent when it comes to American made stuff. Simpsons did a great 96 for a Halloween episode with Clinton and Dole. Mm-hmm. South Park has done some great ones, but one of them that just stands out the most for me is Futurama,
yeah.
2012, and I mm-hmm. think it was pretty telling on what we had coming up with what we're dealing with now, the monster that we've created, yes.
Well, we appreciate the piece that you made, and we're going to listen to it right now.
Who here is tired of illegal space aliens taking our good Earth jobs? Yeah! Me too! I promise to cut taxes for the rich and use the poor as a cheap source of teeth for aquarium gravel.
Yeah, that'll show those poor.
Why are you cheering, Fry? You're not rich.
True, but someday I might be rich, and then people like me better watch their step.
For this segment of Futurama Philosophy, I want to talk about the thing we are all trying to escape, presidential elections.
I don't give a bag of butts who won the election. Nothing's gonna change.
I know it's been a tough year, and a half, and a 4 years, and a decade, and a since 2000 and before this election cycle, but we only have a few days left, and a few months after that, and 4 years more, and only 1,000 years after that, if we're lucky. And like any great satire, Futurama has been right there, skewering the absurdity of what is ultimately, so I've been told, a very serious decision.
Voting isn't cool, so I stayed home alone and got trashed on Listerine.
In the universe that is Futurama, Nixon, naturally, is president of Earth.
Nixon's back!
And, in what can be viewed as either prescient or the fact that things never seem to change, the show does a pretty great job of capturing the predicament we find ourselves today, particularly when it comes to the rise of one such candidate, Trump. I'm talking about Trump.
I'll stick with the evil maniac I know, thank you.
One thing I love about this show is how wonderfully it conveys both the optimism and cynicism that surrounds our absurd election system.
These are important issues. We can't just reduce them to sound bites.
It also does a pretty good job depicting a certain presidential nominee, Trump, despite airing years before this nominee became the national daily headache we suffer today. So as the story goes, President Nixon is struggling in his re-election because he's Nixon. While he initially gets some traction by attacking aliens,
I promise to build a really big Dyson fence across the southern border of our solar system.
Nixon finds himself losing to an honest and charismatic senator.
We just need to conceal your intelligence and honesty in a hipper, dumber package.
You explained his positions in a way even an idiot could understand, and that appealed to me for whatever reason.
This leads Nixon to play his
trump card.
We'll start a rumor that he's an alien.
Hey, yeah, that'll cost him votes.
Then, when he says he was born on this planet, we make him cough up his Earth certificate. Keep it on the news, put him on the defensive.
After some push and pull, I can't give it all away, the senator ends up clearing the rumors, even though he shouldn't have ever had to. Sound familiar?
It's all thanks to you, Leela. You stood by me and exposed my private medical records, even after I begged you not to.
And then it ends in classic Futurama style.
Morbo congratulates our gargantuan cyborg president. May death come quickly to his enemies.
It's sad when a cartoon election involving Nixon's head, space aliens, and robot monsters comes off as more civil than what we are actually facing today. But before you lose more hair, sleep, fluids, or estrange yourself from stupid family, just vote and take a break. Revel in the entertaining escapism that hopefully lies in your future. And, in a few days, we can start it all over again.
It's Politics 101.
This has been Futurama Sophomy. Futurama Philosophy. Futurama Philosophy.
That was great, David. The Futurama philosophy piece.
It gave me the feels, all the right clips in just the right order.
Exactly. Masterful.
I'm just piggybacking on what's already great. There's been a lot of great commentary. That's one of the nice things about the reality of what we face with what's going on. There's all these wonderful things that we can always go to and say, you know, something's going to happen on Tuesday, but you'll always have, you know, just take a step back. And there's always, you know, you're still going to get up in the morning. The sun's going to come up. There's still going to be, you know, people picking up the garbage. You'll have your job. It's just things are going to be okay.
Well, I think that speaks to something that I think in the fervor of the moment when people are talking about political candidates and such that they, yes, life does presumably go on as it did before with all the same, like, you know, inaccessibilities, the same sort of oppressions, the same sort of, you know, like life as it is. And Futurama does a great job of that satire of bringing it to a point. I'll stick with the evil I know, you know, like the entire political process in that way, you know, begs to maintain that status quo, which is, you know, an interesting piece, along with, you know, Nixon forever being a head in a cybernetic body ruling the whole of this galaxy forever.
He's a wonderful foil. I mean, even like the Watchmen comic, the famous Alan Moore thing, Nixon was president, he was going to blow up Earth, and he's just a great character, and hopefully we can get some, you know, great stuff after this election. We've got it all there already.
Media just makes it for us.
I know.
Well, we have to kind of wrap it up, folks. And so as we are ending a Radio Geekly, I want to thank Rob. I want to thank David. I want to thank Jess. I want to thank everybody who came on, interviewed with Geek Girl Con, with Comic-Con, with Pretty Awesome Gamers. Thanks to everybody. Radio Geekly is also online. We have a Facebook page. We have a Twitter. We have all of these things. But do you have us? Join us online for discussions, for more information, for all of the amazingness that comes from a Radio Geekly. I'm Becky, and I'm saying goodbye.
Sorry. Thanks, Becky.
Yeah, I'm not David, and I'm not Rob, but you are.
And he is.
And we're us. Stay tuned for more amazing radio here on KBOO Community Radio 90.7 FM in Portland.